Today, we'd like to send a special thank you to the following restaurants for supporting No Goat Left Behind: Aldi La, Back 40, Cleaver, Community Food and Drink, Northern Spy, and Palo Santo. Show your support at these restaurants by ordering one of the menu items featuring goat. Goat is the most eaten protein in the entire world, yet in the US we import most of our goat. Our dairy farms are forced to kill some male goats at birth because there's no market for them. Help make a change. Support No Goat Left Behind.
Well, here we go. We're at another episode of Unfiltered here at Roberta's on a very balmy, balmy October day. And this is your host, Brian DeMarco, and sitting in for the lovely and absent Aaron Fitzpatrick is Miss Lucy Milner. Say hello, Lucy.
Hello.
For any loyal listener of this program, you'll know that Lucy has been in the studio with us for the last 25 or 30 shows, as
enjoying every minute,
and beer wench and heckler and all around, you know, party friend. So we welcome you as a mic hostess today.
Thank you.
And for those of you who are looking for Miss Erin, she will be calling in after our break to talk about some very pertinent things on the East End of Long Island, and maybe even talk about goats. So this is something I'm sure you'll be very excited to talk about. So Lucy, tell us, you know, this incredible rise of yours from beer girl to chef to fork and anchor, East End girl to now radio host. Like, tell us a little about yourself.
So Erin and I have been friends for a long time, and she moved in with me in November of last year, and we've been working on a project trying to get off the ground in the North Fork of Long Island, and we finally have started that about a month ago, and we almost permanently sort of back and forth moving from Brooklyn to New York.
And this is Fork and Anchor. This is your project.
Yes, this is Fork and Anchor. Heritage has been a support for us as well.
So tell us the mission statement for Fork and Anchor so I understand what you guys do and how you do it.
So the mission statement for Fork and Anchor, we have sort of taken over a deli and want to, there's an amazing amount of farmlands and wineries and amazing people that are out there that just don't seem to have been noticed enough, and we want to become part of sort of showing what all these amazing growers have out there. And so we've taken over a store where we want to focus on local, as everyone's sort of doing, and bring it to more to the locals that are there, because they don't really realize how much stuff is actually growing.
So it's a sort of a farm to table concept, but for the East End. So does it have more legs than just roadside stand?
Yes, it does. It is definitely a convenience store, and we're going to have sandwiches and things like that, but we also are going to have a CSA out of there as well, and we have other projects in mind. There's a beautiful barn in the back of the store that we're going to renovate. Kickstarter helped us with that, and we're just looking forward to the next couple of years of just seeing what's out there and being a part of the community there.
Well, that's amazing. Well, for the purposes of this show, is there going to be some wine element to what you guys are? I mean, obviously, we've talked on this show many times about the North Fork and the wines and just the wines of Long Island in general. Is there going to be a way to showcase the wines of Long Island at Fork and Anchor?
Yes, Erin and I have been discussing this on how she can how she can integrate all this into her lifestyle as well. And there's so much great wine out there, and we have just taken a course with Just Food the other day about CSAs and found out that we could actually do a CSA for wine. So we're going to...
Well, define what a CSA is for our listeners who don't
know. CSA is
a
community-supported agriculture. So we will have a few different farmers because of what's growing and what we would love to have within the CSA. So we'll have eggs from one farmer, we'll have duck meat from another, we'll have vegetables from one fruit, and we're very excited that we're going to look further into the wine CSA, and Erin's going to be obviously the leader on that.
Well, it's, I mean, she's obviously has her sort of ear to the ground and knows what's happening out there in terms of the wine for the North Fork. I mean, what are some of the producers that you guys are focusing on? Like, who do you think is making great wine out there?
We love Joel McCary out there. He's doing lots of great stuff. James Port as well. McCall has a really good Pinot Noir. There's Pominuck. There's a lot of great people out there. Shin as well with all their biodynamic stuff. You know, they're one of the larger known wineries right out there.
And doesn't that sort of dovetail right into your mission statement and sort of like the purpose for the radio as well? As we're trying to talk about, you know, sustainable and earth-friendly things. And so, you know, when people think about Long Island wines, they probably don't even realize that most of them are organic or biodynamic. They just see, you know, expensive.
Mm-hmm. I know. And that I think, it's a little scary for people who aren't familiar with the wines, that the price points are a little bit high, but you should just try it because there are great things coming out of there.
And I think for people who actually, you know, understand the business a bit, it's real estate and labor costs. I mean, it's not, you know, obviously you can do cheaper in Chile or something, but there's a far different economies of scale there. And you know, we've talked about it, you know, almost ad nauseum, what it would take to make the equivalent wine on Long Island that you could do in Argentina. It just doesn't seem like, it's not a possibility. So I think that they have to step up their game in Long Island and just make better and better wines so they can support sort of the structure around it.
Yeah, they're working hard at that, and they're using their fields for more than just winemaking too, which I think is helping with the whole the ecosystem out there of what their wine's going to become.
Well, there's a little bit of news that I wanted to pass along now that we've done our Long Island stint, and shout out for Long Island. Wanted to tell everyone who's listening, for tomorrow night we have a magnum party. The Austrian Wine Council and Wines of Austria are promoting this event, and they are doing something that's a little unique in terms of timing and then venue. And it's starts at 11 p.m. and it will be tomorrow night. It's essentially a pop-up store, but it's at the Open House Gallery on Mulberry Street. That will be 201 Mulberry Street, and that starts at 11 p.m. tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and it's going to be all magnums of Austrian wine. So it's a pretty cool event, and I think they're trying to get a different crowd, or maybe the sommeliers who get off work and can check it out. So if anyone's in the trade, or even a consumer who's kind of bored at 10:45, wants to go drink on a Wednesday night, check it out. Again, we'll post it on the website here at Heritage. It's a Austrian wine magnum party, and that will be tomorrow night on Mulberry Street, 201 Mulberry Street, down in the village.
Are these, is it hosted by the ladies that were on the show a couple
of
months ago?
It is, it is. Well, I think they've organized it. It's Wines of Austria, so it's officially sanctioned by the Austrian Wine Council, and will be, you know, hosted as such. But I think, you know, there's some Barter House wines there that we're excited to be showcasing. Leo Hillinger will have some magnums of that, and Anton Bauer wines will have. So you'll catch some of, you'll see some familiar faces down there if you dare to venture out on a Wednesday night.
On the Lower East Side.
On the Lower East Side.
That's good.
So that's a quick shout out. So I was looking today also in the news, and I saw that they officially have said the economy is sort of back, but I wouldn't say that it's back in any way that we remember it. apparently wine consumption is up. But the category between $20 and $45 is still really suffering. And while it wouldn't surprise many people, I don't think anyone thought that consumption was up. So I guess we drink in good times and bad. But
you got to get through those days.
Yeah. So do you think that if we talk about what we said about Long Island wines, I feel like all those wines kind of fall into the 20 to 40 category.
Definitely.
And then you see that wines $15 and under are growing at a 7 to 10% clip, according to Wine Business News. And I thought that was really interesting. And then, conversely, on the very high-end segment, wines at $100 and over seem to be doing very well, or at least not tapering off at all. And so from my own experience, I've noticed that The China thing has kind of cooled off a bit. You know, they're not chasing Lafitte every vintage, every bad vintage. So some of the rare wine game and the people that are out there trading Bordeaux futures, you know, it's kind of cooled off a bit. I mean, there's obviously some brisk trade and auctions, and, you know, guys like John Capon and Acker Merrill seem to be still doing a very good brisk business. But in terms of, like, the Lafitte madness, that's sort of over. So there really is a polarizing of the wine business, which I think is kind of interesting. And
Are you noticing that with distribution as well?
I think that the customers that we're talking to are always looking for value. And everyone wants, it's a funny, I was trying to have a discussion at a sales meeting, and, you know, everyone wants something for the lowest price possible, but we have, I call it the Costco example. And so, you know, the bulk, it's like, So I have, you know, Andy's Deli is below my apartment on the Upper West Side. So, you know, when you walk into Andy's Deli and you want a roll of toilet paper, the reason it costs $2 is because you want one roll and you want it now.
Right.
But
convenience charge right there.
Exactly. But the current buyer out there, they want to shop at Andy's Deli, but they want to pay Costco prices.
Right.
And when you try to remind them, like, look, if you go to Costco,
yeah,
right, there's a if you want 48 rolls of toilet paper and you have room for that, then you can get it for 12 cents a roll. But if you want one roll, you have to pay $2. So the same thing with volume discounts and wine. It's, you know, if you want to buy a pallet of wine, you get a great price. But everyone wants the pallet price for two cases. And it seems to be that we're looking at value on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of disappointing from my standpoint where, you know, you want to be as, you know, helpful to your customer and you want to try to sell them wine. Their goal is to sell them what they want. But they seem to want, you know, they want Costco, but they want to buy it at their corner deli. And so that seems to be where our disconnect and where the wine business is headed. And I think all business right now is, you know, when you see Walmart and, sorry, discount, you see, like, what more can they be discounting? I don't understand. So, I mean, it's just the opposite of what you guys are trying to do on the East End. I mean, aren't you, you're not really charging for, you're charging for convenience, but you're also charging for quality, right?
Right. And there, Aaron and I noticed this thing that it's like, you know, we'll be sitting down eating a regular meal, and most of the products that we're eating are from 10 miles away, which is just so wonderful. And it's a luxury in a way, but it's not, because we're just helping, you know, it's convenient for us and it's at a better price than what you would pay other. It's a weird sort of balance of really good food locally, and because we're 10 miles from where these farms are from, you do get an advantage of being so close to them.
Well, I mean, and I think that for the bulk shopper in all of us, that, you know, just can't get that kind of freshness and that kind of quality. So you have to really check out, you know, shout out for Mr. Patrick Martin's and, you know, obviously the Heritage brand and some of the Heritage meats that that are certified. We look for those, and I think those are getting a lot more distribution. So, you know, there is a premium to be had and paid, but it's about what you put in your body. I mean, I had this totally guilty pleasure. Before we go to break, I'll let you in on a secret. I had a totally organic breakfast yesterday, and was I was on the tail end of a juice diet, which has been like totally.
Not fun.
You know, I come to Roberta's here and I'm like looking at the pizza and the beer and I want to kill myself. But on the tail end of that, and, you know, I drop about, you know, 8 pounds, and you can see my jawline, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. New haircut too.
Know, if you can't lose weight, you just get a haircut. but no, the hook is that,
guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure. Okay. So I'm walking to this appointment with a client, and they're running late, and I'm standing there, and so I start, you know, obviously whip out the iPhone, and, you know, 50 messages and 25 emails, and it's like driving me insane, and I'm looking at this McDonald's Golden Arches like across the street on 8th Avenue. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And so I just looked at them, like, I could really go for a fillet of fish right now. And
that used to be my mom's most favorite thing at McDonald's.
It's so ridiculous. So I had organic breakfast, like total lemonade for like mid afternoon.
No.
Total, you know, just at the end of the day, it's like, okay, the first thing I had after my juice cleanse was a McDonald's Filet-O-Fish.
Oh, with?
A small fry and a Diet Coke.
What is it? Small French fry doesn't even look like the small French fry.
Whatever. Right. Whatever it came with. Whatever the value meal was. I didn't supersize it. I didn't like...
That's good.
I didn't supersize me or super high me, whatever the point would be. But so that was my guilty. That was the first meal that I had after a juice cleanse.
How was it?
It was epic.
Was it satisfying?
Oh my God.
Do you feel ill now?
No, I felt completely sick. But so hey, you know, we're gonna jump off for a break. Our producer's giving us a signal, and then when we come back, we're gonna jump into a live phone interview with Ms. Erin Fitzpatrick. So take care, everybody, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Stands on golden sands and watches the ship that goes sailing somewhere beyond the sea. She's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms. Beyond the star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt, my heart will lead me there soon. Meet beyond the shore, we'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be.
All right, everybody, we're back. Little Frank at the break. We'd like to hear that. And this is your host, Brian DeMarco of Unfiltered, with our special co-host today, Miss Lucy Milner.
Hello.
Well, because, you know, the original fans of the show can never do without their daily dose of Erin, I think we have Erin as a call-in. I'm not sure if she's... Oh. It sounds like Erin upset.
Shooting the shit.
Oh, there she is.
There she is. Yeah.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Instead of the Daily Viv, this is the Daily E, the Daily Erin.
Yeah, you guys are sounding good.
That's nice. That's nice. Lucy got over a panic attack when she had her second beer.
Where are you sitting right now?
Once she had the second beer, though, it all kind of...
Yeah, mellows out.
So, or when are we going back on live?
We are now. We're live.
Oh, dear. Now I'm hearing this online.
Well, it's
slight good. Delay.
It's all right. Well,
All right.
Turn off your online volume so you can play with us live. Erin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks for calling in. And
thanks.
We are so excited that you're still, you know, running... The fork and the anchor out there, and
yeah, it's been a good day. We've had some sunshine after a rainy morning.
Nice.
And I was listening a bit to what you were speaking about before, and it sounds like you had a successful cleanse, huh?
Oh my God! Did you like that Big Mac? I mean, the Filet-O-Fish.
Loved it.
Well, speaking of food, I think that you had. Based on what our month is here at Heritage Online and Heritage Network, we're talking about goats.
Yeah.
And the sponsor of our show today is the Goat Board. So what's your thoughts on this, Ms. E?
Well, last week when we had listened to Jack's PSA talking about No Goat Left Behind, which is the new initiative Heritage Food just launched to support goat dairies in the U.S., so that goat was the most popular protein in the world, and I was surprised to hear that. But then as you think about it, and you think about all the different places in the world where, you know, it's a huge source of meat, like in the Caribbean and Morocco, it started to make sense as you think about, you know, how large those places are. So I thought in spirit of the month, maybe we talk a bit about dishes, goat dishes, and some wine pairings that go well.
Well, first of all, it's really fascinating that goat is the most widely consumed protein in the world. I mean, you don't see a lot of goat on menus here in New York City, even out here in Brooklyn. It's not very goat-centric.
It's like Caribbean restaurants and things like that.
Do you remember the dish that Scott Conant at Lampero did a couple years ago called cabrito? It was braised cabrito. So he was doing a braised goat, which was in red wine, and serving it with a rice or pasta. I can't remember which one. But something that goes well with Barolo, actually. So,
wow.
You know, the dry tannins and that and the earthiness of the goat, you know, it became sort of the dish of the restaurant, which was, I think, a lot of people in New York, maybe first time having it, but in the different preparation, it seemed much more attractive.
Well, I love that you're dialing for data, but...
And then there was Zach Palacio, who did a cabrito.
That's awesome.
So he was doing tacos with braised goat, yeah?
Yeah, but I've had those, and the little Napa cabbage and goat and some sort of, some salsa fresco is always nice.
So you don't think necessarily that wine is the first thing you think of when pairing with goat, necessarily?
I mean, here's the thing, is like, you know, as a trained culinarian and someone who can find, you know, the most obscure mixture of wine and food and really takes pleasure in it. I mean, I think I'm a neophyte in terms of goat consumption,
mm-hmm.
to even understand. I mean, I get the, I don't know, is it, maybe the Barolo, depending on what it's cooked with, is amazing, but I feel like it's a nice Merlot and goat should do the trick, right?
Yeah, or if you have something like a spicy curry, like a Jamaican spicy curry,
right.
You could have something like a Riesling or Gewürztraminer or something like that go well with it as well.
Well, here's what I want to do. Next time we talk about goat, and maybe if we do our last show this month during Goat Month, we can have someone prepare us, maybe Miss Lucy, the chef de cuisine at Fork and Anchor, can make us a goat dish, and I will be happy to som some wines, and we could pair up some wines for the goat.
We can definitely get you some goat milk from our buddy on the North Fork as well.
Well, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Mr. Hal Goodale has a few goats on his property, and he's making a nice fresh goat milk.
And Aaron, don't you usually travel with goat cheese in your purse?
I usually do, actually. I like having that around at all times.
A nice smear of goat cheese.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think regard to, some people say alcohol accentuates the oils that make spicy food hot. So when you're thinking about, you know, like a fiery Jamaican curry or a goat burger with all these spices or goat tacos, you look for wines that are low in alcohol, like a German off-dry German Riesling or something like that, which helps counter that spiciness.
I think that, honestly, that's probably the folklore of all sweet wines or all low alcohol wines, is whenever someone tastes a German Riesling or even an Austrian with a bit of RS on it, they're like, oh, this would go great with Thai food.
Right.
But it's really weird because like you want. Well, where are you, babe?
This is at headquarters here and Fork and Anchor headquarters.
Oh, okay. Nice. Is there some babysitting happening back in the background there?
Just some, local patrons coming in to get some ice cream.
And some candy, maybe.
Nice.
Some candy, perhaps.
A nice ice cream sandwich.
Nice.
Yep.
Is there going to be trick-or-treating out there?
All right, moving on.
No, so I think we're going to have to do some tasting. I mean, I want to see, I think rich, savory dishes, regardless of the protein, can handle a higher alcohol wine. And I think that, super spicy dishes benefit from a lower alcohol, maybe even a wine that is not completely bone dry, because it helps play havoc with the food. I mean, it allows the food to be the star, and the wine is kind of, complementing it versus dominating it.
Right.
So, yeah, well, that's interesting. So I want next.
So I'm up for that task. I think Lucy would be the woman to talk to about getting the dish together, and us bringing some wines into the studio, and then kind of looking at the different restaurants in New York that are supporting Goat-tober and what they're doing with it, and thinking out of the box a little bit about what some wines would be good alongside.
Mm, that would be fun. So, yeah. So Rocktober meets Goat-tober. And, what do we soundtrack that with? I'm going to have to go to Jack. I'm going to have Jack soundtrack. Goats, wine, and I think it's
cheese.
Yeah, goat cheese. I think it's Ted Nugent meets Spandau Ballet.
We already have an interesting selection of tunes going on today, so I'd say continue to rock out with that.
But hey, I really appreciate you calling in, and
I'm going to sign off. Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Aaron.
Keeping Brian in line today, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Great, Aaron. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Well, that was our intrepid reporter in the field, Miss Aaron Fitzpatrick. And for our listeners, we'll be back again next week in the studio for another episode of Unfiltered. And special shout out to our producer, Jack, and
you, Jack.
Our guest, VJ, today.
Thank you for having me.
Miss Lucy Milner. Take care, folks.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. As a part of National Food Day, St. John's Bread and Life, Brooklyn's innovative and life-saving food service program based in Bedford-Stuyvesant, is inviting Brooklyn chefs and purveyors to learn about how the organization is marrying the procurement of old-fashioned, locally grown organic produce with the latest technology to deliver healthy, cost-effective meals to those in need. St. John's Bread and Life, located at 795 Lexington Avenue, will hold an open house on Monday, October 24th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Visit www.foodday.org to sign up for the event. The following message has been brought to you by Taste Brooklyn. Our city's finest chefs partner with farmers and local vineyards next to the Green Market for an extraordinary outdoor culinary festival. Try exquisite delicacies using locally grown seasonal delights on the plaza outside Brooklyn's Borough Hall. Top chefs and artisans will offer sumptuous fare paired with premium wines, all to empower our neediest children to get healthy. The mighty FDNY and DSNY harbor their own culinary masters in uniform. They will cook off against the pros. Sample delicious cuisine without stressing over a reservation while supporting a worthy cause. Taste Brooklyn's Feel to Fork Outdoor Culinary Festival, Saturday, October 15th, 2011, from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Learn more and buy tickets at tastesofbrooklyn.blogspot.com. That's tastesofbrooklyn.blogspot.com. The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. 14 family farms and over 50 restaurants have committed to participation in No Goat Left Behind, a new program developed by Heritage Foods USA, a meat distribution company dedicated to preserving endangered breeds. Without an end market, the majority of male dairy goats are sold into the commodity market or killed at birth. Dairy farmers are always struggling with feed prices, milk prices, and weather. Goats usually have twins or triplets, and for every female who will become a milker, there is a male buckling who will become a financial drain. It makes no sense that these males are sold into the commodity market or put to death when the United States imports almost 50% of its annual goat supply. Home consumers interested in participating can order goats through heritagefoodsusa.com. They will receive goats via FedEx, and home delivery is available for New York City customers. In addition to the goat, these packages will also include recipes and a DVD featuring interviews with the farmers, processors, and chefs demonstrating how to break down and cook goat. Again, for more information on No Goat Left Behind, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com or call Aaron Fairbanks at 718-389-0985.